Nerds.
Today's episode is sponsored by NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast. Ever Google a money question and end up 12 tabs deep with 12 different answers? This podcast is your shortcut back to clarity. NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast breaks down financial decisions with a team of trusted journalists. They explain the why behind decisions like investing, home buying, and choosing credit cards with clear, research-backed insights. No jargon, no misinformation. Make your next financial move with confidence. Follow NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast on your favorite podcast app.
It's a brand new best podcast in baseball. I'm joined by Post-Dispatch editor Nathan Mills. We're going to talk about the National League Central. It's filled with winning teams, but that's not going to last. We also discuss how to measure the modern starter and if it's time to update some of the stats that have grown dusty and insignificant over time and now are misleading. Can anybody in this game pitch more than six innings anymore? Well, there's a reason why no one with the Cardinals has, or just one for the Cardinals has. Nathan Mills, brand new BPIB, coming to you soon. Cue the music. Hello, everybody, and welcome to the best podcast in baseball, brought to you by Closets by Design of St. Louis. I'm St. Louis Post-Dispatch baseball writer Derek Gould, joined this week by editor there at the Post-Dispatch, Nathan Mills. Good to have you back, Nathan. I apologized in the previous episode for being AWOL for a while. There's still some remnant in my voice as to why I was AWOL. So it's good to see you, and I apologize. If you're wondering why I wasn't answering your phones, it wasn't because I was always behind on deadline, though I probably
I mean, that sounds right. I honestly just assumed you hated me. That's what I was thinking. I probably
just
made a
bad. Talk.
Yeah, no, I understand. I've been sick all spring myself, so I get it. No worries. No need to apologize.
I mean, Star Wars characters had more articulation than I did. I couldn't, like, I would mumble and grumble and gravel would come out. It was really bad.
Yeah, yeah, you got to do a whole episode as like Jabba the Derek the Hutt.
Yeah, no, I couldn't even get that. Terrible. Like, yeah. You know, please don't. I was called that.
No.
It hurt. Oh, so we have a lot to discuss. But, you know, in the most recent Best Podcast in Baseball, Kevin Wheeler and I discussed kind of the vibe at the ballpark. So I do want to get your quick thoughts on that. What was that like to watch develop from afar, become a sensation? And what do you think its staying power is? Will it be gone by the time the Cardinals return from this road trip?
So, you know, so to be honest with you, at first when I saw it, I kind of thought it would get shut down pretty quickly. And then once the team embraced it, oh man, it's like a breath of fresh air. You know, I mean, this is a team, and I don't just mean the players. I mean, this is an organization that has at times been kind of stodgy and stiff, you know, just in not only in the way they played, but just in the way they operated. And so to see him embrace this was great. You know, we've talked about this being a new era in Cardinals baseball because of the guys on the field and how young they are and kind of this new generation of player, right? But it's more than that. I mean, this is a cultural shift, I think, that we're starting to see a little bit. You know, it took the Stephen F. Austin Club baseball team ripping their shirts off, but hey, thanks to those guys for giving us the encouragement. You know, the big thing is, you know, will it last until they come back? Yeah, I think so. I mean, it may be a little rough stretch here with the road trip, but you come back to a weekend Cubs series at Busch Stadium, you might get tarps off in way more than the right field section. You know, I mean, so it could be a big deal. Now they start having a rough stretch here. Maybe fans go, you know, I don't want to take my shirt off for a team that's losing 6-3 every day. So I think I would like to see it have some staying power. I would like to see it stick around, but whether it will, I think that is going to at least partially rely on the level of play.
Mm. Oh yeah. Well, yeah. Winning is everything. You know, we want a catalyst for something. You need more than winning, but to sustain it, you need winning in style of play. Cardinals are in the midst of 12 consecutive games against the division. It has been, to put it mildly, a long time coming. The schedule this year did not have a lot of National League Central teams facing each other in the opening weeks. That explains why they all have winning records as they reach 50 games. I believe all of them will be 500. In fact, I know all of them will be 500 or better if at game number 50. The Cardinals are going to play game 50 at some point in time, weather permitting, against the Reds. I'm here in Cincinnati to cover that series. What do you make of the National League Central? They're all not going to continue to win. There's a zero-sum game when they start playing each other, and they can't continue this. But for them to show this kind of success, to say, build up this kind of momentum going into the heart of the division schedule, let's say, what do you make of the division?
Well, I think you kind of hit the nail on the head, right? They've not played each other yet, really, so they've not had a chance to put some dents on one another. I mean, there's been a little bit, but this is kind of really the stretch where it begins. You know, so far they've collectively been the best division in baseball. Their records would indicate that. I mean, they don't have the top end talent of some of these divisions, but top to bottom, the best division in baseball. But I think we know from watching the past several years and looking around at some of these rosters that without some serious growth in the next, you know, couple of months, this is going to slow down for some of these teams. I mean, just look at the Cardinals, right? How many of these wins are by one or two runs? How many of these wins are comebacks? How many of these wins are in extra innings? And a lot of them, you know, you think about, you know, hopefully you're going 50, you know, 500 or better in those games. The Cardinals are what, like 800 or something like that in those games? Like it, like it's not sustainable. So at some point that's going to stop. And they're not the only team
in extra innings, and 19 of their 28 wins have been by two runs or fewer.
Exactly. I mean, so that you know, the keeping those games going their direction is not likely to continue at that pace. So at some point, I think they'll come back to earth a little bit. You know, the Pirates will come back to earth a little bit. Not that they're soaring by any stretch, but at 26 and 24, they're still over 500. I think the Reds will come back to earth a little bit. You know, we talked before the season about this probably being the Cubs division to lose, with the Brewers doing what the Brewers do. And right now that's kind of what the top of the division looks like, right? The Brewers are leading the way just a couple of games ahead of the Cubs. And here we go into, you know, actually playing against division rivals. And this may be the time that they get to pull away.
Yeah. Well, the Brewers just swept the Cubs. And I would say probably for the first 6 weeks of the season, you know, you're looking at the Cubs being not just the best team in the division, but one of the best teams in the National League. Pitching issues have got to be a huge red flag for the Cubs at this point. You know, their pitching depth, their starting rotation, they've been hit by injuries, and, you know, they weren't exactly robust there to begin with. They were doing a lot of their work with a really strong defense, great run prevention team, and a strong run creation team. But you know, you need starting pitching to get through. The Brewers continue to do Brewer things. I mean, they've dealt with injuries. Christian Yelich hasn't been a factor. Bryce Turang has been a huge factor. You know, he, Elly De La Cruz, and Jordan Walker have given some of the best performances in this division when ranked by wins above replacement. And I don't think that a lot of folks would go, oh, yeah, Bryce Turing, of course. Yeah. But he's a Brewer, and he's been a big, huge part of their success. You know, I don't know. Like, when you look at this division, I picked the Cubs to win. I picked the Pirates to make the playoffs because I think they did enough to improve their offense, and they have just a remarkable pitching staff. It's not just Paul Skenes, he's the headliner, but they go deep into the bullpen with just remarkable stuff. I always look at the Cincinnati Reds and go, hey man, that team has a lot of talent. Why doesn't it come together? And they've added to that talent with some young players this year. It's a really difficult division because I think entering it this season, and push back on this if you disagree, but I think I could make a case for every team in the division but the Cardinals for winning the division. And now you can make a case for every team.
Yeah, I think that I agree with you on that, though I think part of that would have been, you know, if you'd have asked me in March, it would have been a little more more about how open the division is rather than necessarily how good every team is, right? Like we keep talking about the Brewers doing Brewers things, but it's kind of the, they keep doing it without the talent that you would expect to do it. And so the Cubs, you know, in March were the only team that looked like they had the talent to do it. You know, certainly win the division, you know, wild card is a different discussion altogether, but
yeah,
you know, I think you could have made an argument for any of them, but the Cardinals in March, you know, I think, of course reality is that this is not going to work for every, you know, no, not every team is going to finish above 500 and these aren't going to stay this way. But, you know, when you look at the talent on these teams, I mean, I agree with you. The Pirates have an incredible pitching staff. The Reds are a team that regularly in my fantasy baseball league are a discussion of like, when are these guys going to figure it out? There's so much talent here that's just not gelling or working out together or whatever it is. You know, so yeah, I could have bought that in March and could buy it now, even, you know, adding the Cardinals into it. I just think, you know, there are two teams with a roster that has some demonstrated success over time. Mm-hmm. And so if I were a betting man, I would not put any money on the bottom three teams. It would just be on one of the top two teams. But yeah, I mean, I could see a world where the Pirates do it. I could see a world where the Reds finally click and do it. I just, I wouldn't put money on it.
Well, let's think about that. Okay. So the Pirates put their pitching together and they get some sort of offensive revival from Ozuna O'Hearn gets healthy. You know, and they get maybe a little bit crisper play, they could win the division. That's the recipe for them. You look at the Reds have Ellie De La Cruz, who's playing really well. And then you have, you know, Chase Burns, who's pitching very well. Do they get their bullpen kind of sorted out? That seems to be the difference for them. When the bullpen is good, they win. And when it has struggled here, in say the last 25, 30 games, they've struggled to hold leads, to take advantage of their offense. So maybe a fortified bullpen and they win. What do the Cardinals have to do to win this division? What is their route to winning this division? How many things have to go right other than everything?
Yeah. Well, so that's it. I mean, I think you kind of nailed it, right? When you wrote before the season that this is a Cardinals offense that is going to need to do everything they can to score every run they can. And that's what they've done so far. And so far, so good. Will that continue over 162 games? I don't know. It has over 50, so why couldn't it over 162? So, I mean, that's the first thing, is keeping the offense just throwing everything at the wall and having some of it stick. You know, when the Cardinals starting pitchers are rolling, I mean, we had that stretch of four straight quality starts there, and I'm certain we'll talk again about the quality start here in a little bit, but that four straight stretch of quality starts, Cardinals were winning. I mean, that's what you need. You need to get some length out of your starters. Well, offense throws everything at the wall and some of it sticks. You need to get length out of your starters, and you need the bullpen to be, it doesn't even need to be great. I don't think, just be consistent. Like we've seen a couple of guys in the bullpen this year. I don't want to single anybody out, but we've covered them. So Stanek and Swanson have both, you know, had times where they've struggled, and they've had times where they've looked fantastic in different situations. If we can find a little more consistency top to bottom, not just Riley O'Brien, which kind of seems to be the one consistent factor right now.
And JoJo.
Yeah. Always JoJo. I feel like that one kind of goes without saying. JoJo is, you can check my fantasy baseball teams the last several years, easily my favorite Cardinals reliever. He's
been one of the best relievers in baseball for three years. That's not even, it's a wildly underappreciated outside of St. Louis.
Yeah, and so I think if you get those three things going, you know, it's a possibility. But, man, those three things all coming together at the same time for 112 more games feels unlikely, but we'll see.
Yeah. I mean, if we get into the Wayback Machine, I'll tell you a quick story. And it has a point, I promise. But one of the things when I was an intern at the Palm Beach Post back in the mid-90s, down there in Florida. I spent some time, or one of my roles there, because so many of the actual sports writing staff had gone to cover the Olympics. So I got to fill in kind of behind them, had a great time doing it, got to cover so many things, but one of my assignments was outdoors. And so, you know, I got to do the fishing report pretty consistently, and I got to kayak and canoe the Loxahatchee River and write about that, and sea kayak, go out there on the ocean in a sea kayak and everything like that. One of my assignments was offshore racing. And I don't know if you're familiar with this. I'm not going to say crash course in it. I almost did, because crashing in that sport is wildly dangerous.
Yeah.
These boats go at such hyper speeds that you just can't, sometimes your eye doesn't process it. We were out on a boat to cover the race. So we were out in the water and the boats were going around us. And I was like, I think I'd be better watching this thing on TV maybe, because it could keep up. I can't anything. But anyway, the boat that won, I'll never forget it. I will never forget the boat that won, because I went to talk to them after they had it out of the water and it won. And I was talking to the guy who drove it, and we were talking just about the risks involved and everything like that. And he said, that's why the boat's name is Zero Defect. He goes, are you familiar with the movie Interspace? You know, that's what they had to call the ship, Zero Defect. He goes, if one screw or one bolt or one thing is out of place, like if I have, he was telling me, if I have a bolt that I don't tighten down, I'm going at such speed, it's going to vibrate that thing apart. And yeah, that bolt is holding something that is holding this neck something that is holding this neck something together, my boat is going to rattle and fly apart like a, you know, like an asteroid entering the atmosphere or something like that. Yeah. It's just going to. And so he said it's Zero Defect. And that was the name he gave his boat, because he knew that that's what it would take to not just win, but the way he put it was survive. The Cardinals are a zero defect team. They have to play with every bolt as tight as possible and every part of their game as crisp as necessary to win. What they've shown is that they're capable of it. And every so often they'll get enough power to cover for some mistakes, but let's be right, honest, they're not going to do that. You know, and they're not in a spot where they're going to get starters to do that, really. They're not going to have these gems that cover for other things. They're not the Oakland Athletics that we saw play the Cardinals. They can make a couple mistakes or have a little base running error, and then Nick Kurtz can go crank, and now they're up by 4 or 5. They're just not that team, and they're a zero defect team. And I apologize for the long story, but that's sort of how I look at them, that – you know, they need everything as tight as possible to go a little offshore racing.
I love, I've never seen it in the ocean, but I love those jet boats like that. We've got a couple of lakes down here and I've seen them a handful of times myself. It's wild. Mm. It's so crazy.
It is crazy. You know, I've been fortunate to cover that, and I've covered Daytona, and I'm glad I did. I'm super glad to not cover that now and be on a baseball beat. But I'm glad I had that experience in my life where
you don't want to be on a boat going 200 miles an hour. That doesn't strike
you. No, I mean, I love boats, and I
just not at 200 miles an hour.
I'm intrigued by 200 miles an hour, but I don't know. Maybe, I guess if I got invited, I'd give it a go. I guess I would. I would try that. But
now you heard that, all you jet boat owners.
Yeah, no, all the offshore racers who listen to this,
If you have a speedboat and you're out on the ocean, Derek Gould would love to take a ride at 200 miles an hour.
Yeah. Yep.
You're going to get an email this week. Somebody's going to be like, actually.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, we probably. No, I don't think we will. I've been trying to figure out a way for us to get a new like theme song for BPIB for a few years, and that hasn't manifested. So I think this is even less likely.
Oh man. Well, maybe we just need to kill two birds with one stone. We find a guy with a boat who's also a musician.
Correct. Yeah, that would do it. Yeah.
Now we're going to get an email. I can feel it.
Yeah. Yeah. That would be it. Probably that's the Venn diagram that I've been missing. That's exactly right. So the Cardinals need to play flawless and sharp, and they probably, to win the division, need somebody else to falter. I think one of the more interesting races in the division, if you'll humor me, is Murphy versus Marmol for the manager of the year.
I like that.
Like, if the Brewers do this again and win the division, does Murphy go and win a third consecutive manager of the year? But what if the Cardinals have a winning record? You know, what if they do get a wild card? You know, this rebuild is underway. What if they do it with the style of play and the, you know, fans where Ollie's bought tickets? I mean, you know, he went on a media blitz this past week to really capitalize on what was going on. And his purpose was not to, you know, to sell the brand of Ollie Marmol. His purpose was to kind of keep this thing stoked, like come out to the ballpark. I mean, he really is invested in, well, literally invested.
Literally, yeah. He said, I'll go broke. Yeah.
Yeah, literally invested. He wants a better atmosphere, a more lively atmosphere, a more entertaining atmosphere. He loves that. He loves playing to the crowd. You know, I mean, he really does. He likes the challenge of it. He likes the vibe of it. He talks about it when he's at opposing ballparks. But I think it's really interesting. Like, what, you know, I think the route for him to a Manager of the Year award is a lot more direct than it is for the Cardinals to the division title.
Yeah, I mean, I think they have to do less for that, right? I mean, but yeah, I mean, listen, you're a voter.
I am not a voter for that award, my man.
Well, no, I understand. That's probably a bad way to say that, but you're a voter for other awards. I mean, you're involved.
I haven't heard yet.
Voting, I mean, you would consider it, right? I mean, like if this team with this little experience and, you know, just kind of, I don't want to say cobbled together, right? Because this is a plan. This isn't like somebody just did this at the last second. This sort of patchwork of guys, right? Like, yeah. Yeah, I mean, this, you know, if he gets him to a wild card spot, yeah, I mean, it should, that to me feels like a no brainer, you know. I mean, especially if you consider the Brewers, you know, win the division again. You know, I mean, like, don't get me wrong. We, like I said, we've talked multiple times about Brewers doing Brewers things, right? But, you know, at some point, don't you kind of expect it? Wouldn't, you know, an unexpected result be more interesting? You know, as you and I have talked before about Ollie, and you know, some fans have called for his job in the past, but I have always liked Ollie Marmol. I think he does great work during games. I think I really like the way he handles his players, like publicly in the media, and himself publicly in the media. So you know, I would love that for him. I just, you know, well, like we talked about, you know, with everything needing to go right for them to win the division, I think the odds are probably against it in the long run, just considering what it would take for the final result that might do that. But yeah, if this continues and they're even probably in the wild card hunt, you know, if they win 82, 84 games and they're kind of right there, 2-3 games out, you get votes at the very least, I would think. Yeah.
Yeah. I've had my clashes with him, obviously. We had a few on TV, one of them very prominently on TV. I used to remember what he called me on TV, but now it escapes me what he called me. But he's done a really good job this year, and he really did a good job last year. And he's been his management of the bullpen is elite. It's just expert level. And I know fans will complain and they'll point to using Stanek. Well, I mean, this is the roster he's got. And, you know, a team that outperforms the run differential and wins close games is often a reflection of the kind of relief pitching they're getting. And that can be, and in the Cardinals case, definitely is a reflection of the job that, you know, Dusty Blake and Ali Marmol and his staff, Daniel Descalso, John Jay, and now Yadier Molina, and what they do to bend the matchups in their favor in the late games. And Ollie's willing to talk about it, which is great for fans. You know, he talks about how he wants to switch the lineups, and he talks about when he does that and how to spring traps. I mean, it's harder and harder to do because of the American League rules that have come into the National League. You can't really catch a team anymore in a way like you used to with double switches or relief decisions. But it's bent the other way because so many teams have these line changes like hockey that they're going to do for, you know, they'll run in their right-handed batters. And what Marmol is able to do to find the moment when he wants to have the opponent switch their lineup so that it's set up better for JoJo later or for Riley at the end, it's really well done. It's really well done. He's kept his guys healthy. He's, for the most part, had a really good read on their effectiveness. You know, his players really, really respond to him. And, you know, this clubhouse as much as any before. And even some players that he's had public, you know, disagreements with or public comments on, several of them have also been really strongly committed to him, even in the aftermath of that. So it is interesting. I think that's a really compelling race at the moment, is that Murphy versus Marmol. You know, what's it look like for manager of the year? Super early to discuss it, just as it is early to discuss Weatherholt for the rookie, or, you know, where on the ballot of 10 would Jordan Walker fit for the MVP, that kind of stuff. But I do think it's a subplot to the division race that I think is intriguing.
Yeah, and I'll tell you, you mentioned it. The thing that I appreciate most about Marmol is how transparent he can be. I, you know, I think that's a nod to your reporting and Daniel Guerrero's reporting too. But I'll tell you, genuinely, I have learned so much about I don't mean Marmol or the Cardinals in general. I mean, I have learned so much about baseball and the logic that goes into some of those things. Mm-hmm. When after a game he breaks down why he brought in this pitcher, why he made this defensive move, you know, whatever it is. And it's great because it's not inside baseball, which is a great term to use when we're talking about actual inside baseball. Mm-hmm. It's not inside baseball. He explains it in a way where a dummy like me can understand it. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And I think that, to me, as a player, I would have really benefited from that. But as a fan, I get so much more from Marmol than I do from a lot of other managers. And I imagine his players get that same experience.
Mm-hmm. His big thing when he came in was that he was going to be honest with folks. And he talks to all the players about, like, I'm going to be honest with you. You're going to be honest with me. But part of this equation, too, is I will be honest publicly. And, you know, like, he's not going to divulge all the stuff. And if he has an issue with a player, he often will take care of it away. But if things persist, or if there's something that happens publicly and he can't deny that it did on the field, he's going to talk about it, because he feels that, like, that's part of the honest contract that he wants to enter into. He's blunt, man. He can be blunt. But he's also willing to talk baseball publicly in a way that no Cardinals manager has since La Russa. Schilt would talk baseball and would be great, but in smaller settings, you weren't going to see him do that a lot post-game. I'll also add that Zoom did hit him no – it didn't help him at all. You know, he was in the Zoom era, and those are not the times to kind of chat about how baseball went. Those were highly pressurized times. That was a highly pressurized team. And, you know, Schilt is protective of his guys in a way that might not lead into publicly talking about ball. Privately, I learned a lot about baseball from talking with Mike Schilt. I've spoken often about how my IQ in baseball grew because it had to ask questions of Tony La Russa. And then, you know, with Marmol, there'll be times I think it's okay to say this, but whatever, I'm going to say it. There'll be times like when we're in Sacramento. I think it was Sacramento. Give me a second. No, it was San Diego. We were in San Diego a couple weeks ago, and he goes, all right. And we were just talking, right? We're in his office just talking, so it wasn't an interview or anything like that. And he goes, okay, manage the game. Do it. What are you going to do? And I was like, well, I don't know what relievers are available. I don't know. You know, have so much more information than me. I know who pitched recently. I know their pitch counts. But you know more. He goes, okay, well, here that is. So he told me, and he's like, now manage the game. Where do you use this guy? Where do you use this guy? What do you think is going to happen in the fourth inning? What do you know about their starter? And at what point in time is he going to be vulnerable? What are you trying to get to? How are you going to reverse engineer the bullpen? If you want Riley O'Brien in the ninth, excuse me. And he said, you don't have to have Riley O'Brien, but say you want that, then how do you do it? And it was a challenge. Clearly he was challenging me to think through it, but it was also a great opportunity to like bounce ideas off of him. Excuse my cough.
No, that's no problem. I'm a little under the weather myself too. I get it. Yeah, that sounds, I would die for that experience. I love that. Sitting under the learning tree of anybody who has that kind of expertise, but especially, somebody who is actively, using that expertise and using it at a high level is invaluable in any situation. But man, I love baseball so much. I would just love to just sit there and just, I don't want to be challenged to manage the game. I don't have the courage to stand up in that situation, but just, talking about the logic and the thoughts and, that's always what I've loved about baseball is it's such a cerebral game. It's not just up and down the field. There are so many things going on, so many factors in play at any given time, and watching somebody like Marmol, it'd be like in a TV show or a movie, you see somebody looking around and all the numbers are flying around their heads and all the formulas and all the stuff, that's what it feels like sometimes watching Marmol manage a game and then watching him explain it back afterward.
There's been an ongoing discussion between me and the manager about doing a podcast together. So we'll see. One was scheduled. One was scheduled and it fell apart for different reasons. No one's at fault. Something came up with him. And then we talked about the timing of it. It's when you do it, he's got a lot of obviously rights holder stuff and other commitments and everything like that. But he and I have talked about doing that when we can set up a situation to bring people inside that conversation, like not just like have a conversation between he and I about, hey, well, this is going well. What's the team look like? Why do you have three catchers? When is Jimmy Crooks coming up? Or why did you use Ryan Stanton? When are you going to go? You're like, how much did it really cost you to get the tarps off team, right? All that stuff. But more like have a conversation about baseball strategy. And he wants to get me in some, gotcha moments so that he can show listeners how foolish I am, which is fine.
Listeners find out how much of a fool I am every time I'm on here. So don't you worry, you're in good shape.
The other day I brought up something. He's like, oh, really? You would do that? I was like, yeah, I would. He goes, well, here's the reason that's wrong. And I was like, all right, man.
My son does that to me. He's 7. So, Yeah. I feel right at home with that.
Yeah. Well, so one thing this leads into is this is a topic that I brought up in the weekly newsletter, Right Fielder, which went out to all the subscribers. And it asked this question, and it's one that actually I brought up to Marmol the other day, probably about a couple weeks ago. I asked him, I was like, do we need to rethink how we look at a modern starter? Like I think of when I ask you questions about starters, I think of this as like a baseline, right? For what is a good start? What is a good starter? What is a front of a rotation guy. I was like, do we have to kind of scrap that and move away from that? You know, like a quality start still matters. A quality start is still undervalued, in my opinion. But a win has long since been demolished, which is fine. But the notion of going seven innings seems old now, like not even wanted. The Cardinals have had one pitcher get an out in the seventh inning. First 49 games of the season, one pitcher. That is the fewest in Major League Baseball. The Reds have had three. The Dodgers have had 13. I could go on and give you the whole list. One is the fewest. And I say this because it's by design, Nathan. This is not the Cardinals going, well, we haven't had anybody pitch well enough. No, they've had guys pitch well enough. They want to be very conservative with innings and pitches and stress on their pitchers through the opening months of the season. They feel that that makes them better later. They think that's a huge part of their health quotient. And, you know, it worked last year. They think it's very protective of their depth when they don't have it, which is, again, true this year. So this is all by design, but it's made it tricky because when I talked to Michael McGreevy and Matthew Libertor both about this, was like, are you guys satisfied as six-inning pitchers? Like, does that – do you think, okay, well, I gave them six innings, I did my job. And some of them are old school enough that they're like, no. But they get why they're out after six innings. And I'd love to hear like your thoughts on like how does this then trickle down to the statistical way we describe starting pitchers? Because if you just do it by how many innings they pitched, it sure seems like that's not the way to go when the team isn't asking anything more of them.
Yeah, I don't know if it's a matter of – I was just talking to friends about this the other day about redefining the quality start. I mean, we've got the data right about how many teams are reticent to have their starters face a lineup a third time through, which is, you know, by definition going to limit you to six innings at best, you know. Then you see the injuries and not just what that costs you in terms of wins, but what it costs you in terms of money. I mean, this is a business, right? Mm-hmm. So, you know, and we have colloquially, you know, I'm not sure there's been a study on this, but colloquially, we've seen teams like the Cardinals preserve their starters and have success having guys go full seasons. Now, granted, that has sometimes come at the expense of having like a Miles Michaelis with a near six ERA for most of the season, but it kept your starters healthy and by extension helped your bullpen. So, I mean, I think that we've seen the writing on the wall. The data has kind of played out, you know, where teams are headed, you know, which makes all the sense in the world to me. I don't know if it's a matter of redefining the quality start, getting rid of the quality start, or something else. I mean, we have quality appearances, which is four innings and I think a 4 or 5 ERA. So like, oof. That's right. But maybe that's the standard or maybe it's that with the run, you know, differential change. I don't know. But it does kind of seem like the game is moving away from some of the stats that we used to use to kind of define what a good start was or what a good starter was.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I'm of a mind. I kind of touched on this a little bit. I probably should write more of it. But you know, I like quality starts. It's a 4-5 ERA. I get it, but you give me a rotation with a 4-5 ERA for, you know, five times 180 innings. And I will show you a contender because I'll show you a good bullpen because I'll show you, a number two. I mean, there's just so much that comes along with it. I think that, you know, we diminish what a quality start means. But I wrote several years ago that maybe we needed to add kind of a layer to the quality start to show what like an elite starter was. And I proposed adding an inning. So it was 7 innings, 3 runs was a quality start plus or a Gibby.
Okay.
I called it. You know, for Bob Gibson. And you start looking at teams or pitchers who do that, and you just get this list of elite standout pitchers who are just the ones doing the best, right? Now I wonder if the modern game, that just doesn't work. That just doesn't fit. It would be so few pitchers doing that that it would tell you nothing. But I wonder if you have to go the other direction. If actually, instead of adding that inning, you subtract the earned run and you go, give me 6-2.
Yeah.
You know, offense is down for the most part, power's up, but offense is down. Innings are down, starting is changed. But if you go 2-6, you know, that seems to both say, man, that starter did a really good job. That starter did a quality job. But also didn't leave the bullpen strained because they allowed so few runs that the bullpen probably has a wider gap than, say, if it was 4-3, now it's 4-2, 5-2. That seems like that the runs allowed alleviate some of the stress then on the bullpen. And that would be that quality start then stat updated with 6+2 fewer would reflect that a little bit better.
Maybe it's the trick is to do something that's like league adjusted, you know, per year. Yeah. So you've got like OPS plus, right? You know, so you've got maybe a quality start, like the standard at the beginning of the year is 6-3, but as the year goes on, it becomes 5 2/3 and 3, or it becomes 6 2/3 and 2, or you know, whatever. Maybe that's the way. It's like a quality start, you know, QS plus. Mm-hmm. Is league adjusted, you know, for the year. Could even be ballpark adjusted if you wanted to get really crazy.
Yeah. That'd be super interesting. That math is beyond me.
I got into journalism specifically because they told me there wouldn't be any math. So they lied.
My son gave me a math question actually about pitching. But it was more like physics based. And he was asking this question. I was like, oh, I actually know how to solve that. And I was very pleased that I could dust off the old equations in my head and figure out the answer. And he's like, that can't be the answer. I was like, I'm pretty sure that's the answer. And then I was like, well, we could always look it up online now. So we looked it up online and I nailed it, my man. Still got it in there. My math teacher parents would be so proud.
You and I got, well, okay, see, there it is. Math teacher parents. That makes a little more sense. You said the equations in my head. My first thought was you and I have very different heads. There are no equations in my head.
Yeah. No.
The wrong equation that the Scarecrow uses to describe triangles in The Wizard of Oz. That's what I know. Okay. And it's not even correct.
That's pretty good. So I also think the win stat could be changed. This is more an aesthetic thing than an actual qualitative thing. But it's become silly that a starter has to go 5 innings to get a win. It's just that doesn't make sense in the modern game. That a guy can go 4 1/3 inning and do everything asked of him by his team and then be replaced. And all of a sudden a reliever who goes 2/3 or 1/3 of an inning or whatever at the scorer's decision is given the win. I understand that this would have ripple effects through history. You kind of have to have a line of demarcation saying wins before this time required at least 5 innings. You know, and you have all these 200 win guys and everything like that. But if a starter pitches the majority of the game and pitches effectively and leaves with the lead, it sure seems silly that he can't get the win because he's barred by the nature of the stat. I get it. And 5 years ago, 10 years ago, it was cool. But I just think that just doesn't mesh with the current game.
So you're thinking he pitches more innings than anybody else and he leaves with the lead. Mm-hmm. He gets the win if they win. So like an opener that goes 2 innings but pitches more than the other 7 relievers who each throw 1, he gets the win?
Right. Yep.
Okay. I can live with that.
Yep.
What if it was like a What if it was an extreme bullpen game? Nine guys, nine innings. They win 1-0.
Yeah.
The first guy gets the has the run. He leaves with the lead. Mm-hmm. He still gets the win, or
no, he wouldn't necessarily, because he'd pitch one inning, which would not be the majority of the game.
So nobody gets a win.
No, someone would have to get a win. It would have to be at the discretion of the manager of the.
I kind of like the idea that like nobody gets a win in that case. It's a team win. It's not a.
Yeah, I'm okay with that. Team wins. I would like team errors. I think all those things make sense. It's NBA has team rebounds, and those make sense.
I'm with that. Like a team wins. You know, a team win. If everybody pitches exactly the same, and you win one. Like what? Of course, that would never happen. But like. It would be my luck that like I would propose this and it's going to happen today just because I said that. But
yeah, it'd be interesting in the box score. You know, that would be, I mean, either way, we're talking about completely rewriting what the win means.
Yeah.
And having to say, hey, look, pre this, post that, you know, since the new win stat was adopted.
Maybe we need like a Manfred runner in the sixth to help with the quality starts, you know?
No. Every inning after the sixth, they add an extra base runner.
So, yeah. Just to really ramp up the pressure, you know? You have to be quality, you know?
I know. If you bring it in a bullpen, that's the way to do it. That's one way that Max Scherzer would have his way to incentivize the starter staying in the game. You could say, okay, every time a team brings in a reliever, the other team gets to add a base runner.
I love that. That's like banana ball rule. That sounds fun.
That would be so you know, and it adds on, right? So your second reliever in, two runners go on. Your third reliever in, three go on.
Your fourth reliever, you automatically put a run in.
No, okay, sure, whatever. We're getting wild.
Why not? Build a moat around the pitcher's mound to make it difficult for a reliever to get in.
Yeah, that's there you go.
Fill it with alligators and snakes.
Yeah, but that would be one way to really incentivize keeping the starter in is you bring in a reliever, we get a base runner.
I think that would be so fun to play, but not very fun to watch. I'm sticking with the maybe it should be like adjusted year per year, like an OPS plus type. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, I don't know. You couldn't score that in real time, I guess, but that would be. I don't know. I need to think about this.
I would like to drop the 5-inning limit.
I could buy that. I could get that.
Yeah, the 5-inning minimal. Sorry. Just seems like no other pitcher who comes into the game plays by that rule. A team can circumvent that by starting an opener, and then all of a sudden a starter comes in, throws four innings. Now that guy's eligible for the win. I mean, it's just it doesn't make sense.
It's one of those things where, once again, we can blame the Tampa Bay Rays for changing how the game is played, bringing in openers.
Yeah, do you have to be careful doing that these days? Because, like, if you're blaming the Tampa Bay Rays and the style of game that they played – isn't that the Cardinals now?
Shh. Don't give away the secrets.
Okay. I'm just saying.
Don't give away the secrets. I have the Cardinals used an opener yet?
No.
I don't think I've seen them use an opener.
No, not. Tampa Bay has.
That would be wild.
Tampa Bay has three pitchers who have pitched into the seventh inning. Gosh, you know who that's like.
Well, by your number, I think. Oh, into the seventh inning?
Mm-hmm.
Or gotten an out in the seventh inning.
Gotten an out in the seventh inning.
What's that? So they're three times better than the Cardinals.
Three times better than the Cardinals, yeah. Padres 2, Miami 2, Colorado 3, because of course. But no one at 1. But you know who's right there beside them? Tampa Bay.
Yeah, well, all right. Maybe I shouldn't have talked trash so quickly. I actually like openers. Maybe. I don't know why I was even complaining, to be honest with you.
Or maybe you just set the new metric. Hey, Tampa Bay changed baseball. Cardinals are the new Tampa Bay. Are you going to change baseball? The clock's ticking.
Oh, that's a challenge, my brother.
Mm-hmm. There you go. I don't know
if anybody can do it.
Just to bring it back around, I do think that if the Cardinals pull this off for a second consecutive year and they don't have significant arm injuries, I mean, teams should have already taken note. But more teams definitely will. If they go, whoa, what are they doing there? You know, that these guys are, you know, and sometimes guys going to other teams and not experiencing the same success, you know, like a Ryan Helsley, for example, or some of those guys, you know, the Cardinals, I mean, teams are going to take note and they're going to go, what are the Cardinals doing? And I hope that means that they'll subscribe to the Post Dispatch.
I hope it means they'll listen to the best podcast in baseball.
Yeah. Well, that's yeah, but they can get details and understand about what the Cardinals are doing in the postseason.
You know, one other thing is I wonder if players would start to take notice, if pitchers would start to take notice and want to come to St. Louis.
Yeah. Dustin May signed for that reason.
Yeah.
It was part of his conversation with Dusty Blake and Marmol, and it was one of the first things he told us. He's like, I want to get healthy, I want to stay healthy. I needed to go to a place where I could start. And they would be aware of, you know, maintaining my health and making me strong. And the Cardinals did it. And I could not ignore that. That was a big draw. And other pitchers have told me that too. A couple agents have told me that it's come up, that they think that they think the Cardinals would be a good place for their late inning guys or a good place for their starters for that reason.
Could be a way to make the Cardinals a free agent destination again.
Yeah, it could be. It could be a market inefficiency too. Where, you know, a lot of these guys who want their bounce back or pillow contracts look for the Cardinals to do that, even if it means that they won't stay long term, but that the Cardinals will be a springboard, you know, a trampoline into a bigger deal, because part of getting a bigger deal is being on the field to perform.
Well, and it could be several repeats of the situation we may see with May this year. He's been so great lately. If he keeps it up, he could be a trade piece at the deadline. Yep. And add even more to this restocked farm.
Yep, that's a big thing. You know, that'll be a big topic of conversation in future BPIBs, is what if the Cardinals continue to contend, but they're not seen as a favorite? Do they stay the course? And do they make the trades because their eye is on 2027, 2028? Or has the success of this team and the standings accelerated things that they do not? I think a big part of that, and this will be a conversation for another day, it's one that I presented to Chaim Bloom, a big part of that is the message that you send fans. If you ask them to invest in this team and then you divest this team of any talent and contention, you know, what is the message you're sending to the fans? If fans are buying tickets today, you know, for games in August, thinking this is the team that they're going to see, and they get to July and the Cardinals are in the same spot in the standings, they're 10, 11, 12 games over 500. And all of a sudden, a week before you take your kids to see this team that's in contention, they trade their best players for players who aren't going to be here till 2028. You could kind of see how that would be an issue as far as selling it to the fans.
Yeah, Benjamin Hockman wrote a column about it just this week. You know, should they trade May if they're still in this position? And of course, the you know, answer was we don't know yet, right? But you know, Bloom has talked about you know, staying the course and not blowing things up. So yeah, I think we may get an interesting July. I think
his quote to me was that fans can see a sugar high and tell the difference between that and a real thing. So we'll see.
Yeah. I mean, I think that's probably true, but I don't know. You know, how do you define, how do you know the difference between a sugar high? Like, as you know, how many teams have we seen look great through July and then they get to the deadline and fall off? You know, not because they sold anything. They just didn't have the gas.
Or they didn't get the reinforcements.
Yeah, I guess that could be it. Maybe the Cardinals need some reinforcements.
Yeah, that'll be really interesting. And that'll play into the division race, and that'll play into the manager of the year race, and that'll play into everything that we discussed. Nathan, thank you so much. I think we totally solved everything. I think people walk away from here and go, yes, we do need new stats.
And baseball is suddenly fixed.
Yes.
Thank you, best podcast in baseball.
There you go. All right. Next week, labor issues will fix.
Next, yeah, no, I'm not built for that.
No, we won't do that. No. Well, thank you very much, Nathan. This is, you know, that's Nathan Mills, editor at the Post Dispatch and recurring co-host here at BPIB. He, of course, also hosts the best podcast in baseball video, which you can find at stltoday.com along with all of the constant Cardinals coverage. Daniel Guerrero has the news story up about Brian Torres' promotion to the majors. I will be in Cincinnati and Milwaukee with all of the coverage. That could include a rain delay. That could include poor weather. At least we know they'll play in Milwaukee where there is a roof and cheese curd. So this is a great dietary road trip, right? Skyline chili and cheese curds. This is going to be a great one for me to return from. I think I'm going to eat very well, but maybe not all that healthy.
You should get some of that Skyline chili, like take it with you to Milwaukee and then drop some of the cheese curds on top. So that way you really mix the two together.
No. Let's no.
Dude, you got to have cheese on your chili, bro. You might as well get the iconic chili and then put the iconic cheese on it and see what happens.
Wouldn't that be like Skyline poutine?
Huh. Maybe.
Skyline poutine, we just invented. Forget the stat.
But not only did we solve baseball, we solved food too.
Oh my God, Skyline poutine. Here we go. The best podcast in baseball is brought to you by Closets by Design. You can find it wherever you get your podcasts. It's available on Spotify, on Apple, all of it. Please subscribe to the podcast, rate and review the podcast. It's how we know how we're doing with the podcast. And yes, I know I have some weeks to catch up on, so I am doing that. Two episodes this week. Thank you very much, Nathan, for being a part of it. I know that I will double up again next week, so expect a phone call from me and probably some coughing.
I'll be there, and I will bring the Robitussin.
I might need the man. This makes for great radio. All right, my apologies, but you can see what I was going through. I made it almost an hour. Thanks for listening. The best podcast in baseball is only the best podcast in baseball because of its listeners. For Nathan Mills, I'm St. Louis Post-Dispatch baseball writer Derek Gould. Talk to you soon.
Nerds. Today's episode is sponsored by NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast. Personal finance can feel like a pop quiz you didn't study for. This podcast is your study guide. On NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast, you'll hear from trusted journalists who explain the why behind major financial decisions. You'll get research-backed insights and clear pros and cons, whether you're planning a big purchase or just want to grow your wealth. Make your next financial move with confidence. Follow NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast on your favorite podcast app.